The Senate will please come to order, and the clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson? Bates? Bates? Beyer? Beyer? Boquist? Burdick? Devlin? Devlin? Dingfelder? Dingfelder? Edwards? Edwards? Farioli? George? George? Gerard? Haas? Haas? Johnson? Cruz? Cruz? Montes Anderson? Monroe? Monroe? Morse? Nelson? Olson? Brzezinski? Brzezinski? Rosenbaum? Shields? Shields? Starr? Steiner Hayward? Telfer? Thompson? Berger? Berger? Whitsitt? Winters? President Courtney?
A quorum being present, we will now post the colors, and Senator Betsy Johnson is going to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
They're bringing the flag over there.
The invocation today is by Pastor Ben Bryson from the Court Street Christian Church here in Salem.
Would you bow your hearts with me in a word of prayer? Almighty God, you are our refuge, our strength, and ever-present help in our time of trouble. I pray a blessing over these public servants gathered today, whom you've appointed to lead this great state. Bless them and their families for the sacrifice that they make. Give them wisdom from on high, strength and humility, I pray. Bless these proceedings, I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
I want to thank Senator Betsy Johnson for leading us the Pledge of Allegiance, and also the Pastor Ben Bryson for his invocation here today, and I'd like to extend the official courtesies of the State Senate to Pastor Bryson. What we're going to do on the courtesies, I think Senator Nelson has a courtesies and others before we do some other, because we have a special day today. We're on the courtesies. Senator Nelson, did you have one?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. President.
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, we're honored today to have the leadership class from Hermiston, Oregon. I have at my desk Harley Tucker, who is a member of that class, and they're standing right up here. I think there's 12 all told. They come down every time that we're in session. Brenda Turner, who has been leading this group. Brenda, where are you? She's way in the back. She leads this group and has been doing it for several years. It's just a wonderful, marvelous program. You folks that are aware of those things know that how really good it is, and these folks are just fascinated, and I think we're going to have a very interesting day for them today. So ask for courtesies for the Hermiston Leadership Group.
Thank you. Yes, I believe you're standing into the Hermiston Leadership Group. Thanks for driving over to be part of our day. This is your state capital. It's an honor and privilege to have people from all parts of the great state of Oregon. So having you here means a lot to us. I hope it means a lot to you. Stay as long as you like. Come back, see us again and again. It's your capital. I'll recognize Senator Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Please extend courtesies of the Senate to Courtney Kennedy. Courtney is 19. She's the daughter of my aide, Michelle, whom you met yesterday. She's a student at Portland State University, majoring in psychology and linguistics with a minor in Japanese, and enjoys watching action movies. In the long term, she hopes to get a master's in cognitive science and work in artificial intelligence. Please extend the courtesies. Thank you.
Yes, Courtney, we're very pleased you can be here today. I'd like to extend the courtesy to Senate to you. I like your first name very, very much. So come back and see us again and again. I hope you have a nice day. Okay, I'm going to be here. We go. Okay, Senator Jackie Dingfelder, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. It is my honor and privilege to extend courtesies today to Jane Cease, a former state senator, who's sitting at my desk with me today and is my guest. And Jane has lived in Portland since 1966. She served in the Oregon legislature for 13 years, starting in 1978. And Jane was the first woman to chair a legislative revenue committee and is recognized as an architect of historic legislation and transportation and water policy. She was also the first woman to direct the Oregon Department of Motor Vehicles. Jane is now retired and currently serves on the board of the Oregon State Capital Foundation. She also likes swimming and playing poker, and I know not to mess with her on the poker hand because I've heard she's a pretty tough player. Jane and I also share a unique bond. We both have the honor of following in the footsteps of Betty Roberts, who represented the residents of Northeast and Southeast Portland, and now Senate District 23, and we will be honoring her today. So please extend courtesies to former State Senator Jane Cease.
Yes, I have had the honor and privilege to serve with the Honorable Jane Cease and her husband, Ron Cease, the only man who's ever given me flowers. And he did it. I don't know. So anyway, but I'm very pleased you're here. It's an honor and privilege to have you on the floor, and it's a good day. It's going to be a nice day here, so thank you very much for coming. Now, I got to be careful what I do here. All right, I'm going to do this. I got to do this right. They've got this thing scripted, and now it's not right. So I want to go to Senator Lori Montes Anderson because, of course, we have the former governor here, and I want to acknowledge that.
Oh, thank you, Mr. President. I had no idea that I'd be honored to have Governor Barbara Roberts, sitting with me today. She was the very first majority leader of the House, first woman majority leader. She was also Secretary of State, and she was our very first governor of the female governor of Oregon. She is a true role model. I have followed her career. I've gotten her book that I'm going to read, and I'm very honored to have her sitting with me, and I would love to have you extend courtesies to Governor Barbara Roberts. Thank you.
Yes, it's high honor and privilege to extend to you, Governor Roberts, the official courtesy of the Oregon State Senate. I came into the legislature with Governor Roberts. You may not remember that class. She went on to hold statewide office, et cetera. I also served with her late husband, Senator Frank Roberts. He was in the Senate at the time. So the good governor and I have somewhat of a connection in history. I don't know how much she really liked me, but I'm very pleased to have you here, Your Honor. And I know you started out in local government, came here, so you've had an incredible career. And so it's an honor and privilege to have you here on this day. So I hope stay as long as you like. Thank you very much. Senator Jackie Winters, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I am truly honored to have at my desk an individual who I admired when I was in the executive branch of government and who I attribute a lot to my becoming involved in elective politics. She is the individual who was woman who was first elected to a statewide office, and the former Representative Norma Paulus, as well as the Superintendent of Public Instruction, as well as the Secretary of State. So I'm very honored to have her seated with me, a person that I admired over the years.
Thank you. Yes, I never actually served in the legislature with Norma Paulus, but I served in the legislature when she was occupying many of these other extraordinary positions and doing very well. And the Honorable Norma Paulus is from the greater Salem area. And I just tell you one thing about Norma Paulus for the lawyers here. Norma Paulus never went to law school, took the bar exam, et cetera, et cetera. You understand what I'm saying? She was so bright, she didn't have to do what I did and those here who did it. She came from Eastern Oregon, and you could do it back in those days, got to be a law clerk and took the bar exam and never went to law school. So that is very special, a very special person. You should know that. And Bill Paulus, her late husband, of course, is an attorney and an outstanding attorney here. And Bill's gone now. But anyway, it's a high honor and privilege. Didn't mean to embarrass you, Your Honor, but I I struggled in law school, and you didn't even need it. So you obviously are much better than I am. So thank you for being here. I appreciate it very much. Senator Floyd Bozanski, do you want to talk to us?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I also like to ask for courtesies and just acknowledge individuals that are sitting at my desk. Bobby Holland and her son Henry. Bobby is the is the granddaughter of Betty Roberts, and Henry is the great grandson. And they're from Asheville, North Carolina. Henry is the first grade. He likes science and soccer. And Bobby's husband is Major John Holland. He's in the Air Force Reserves, currently stationed at Allen, Delaware, flying C-17s, and that's why he's not able to be with us in Oregon today. So I hope that you will acknowledge them as well as part of the family.
Thank you. Yes, Bobby and Henry, I'm glad you could be here, and I'm glad you're on the floor, and what else has happened here? Yes, Senator Bozanski, you want to?
Mr. President, one thing I've neglected to say is that Bobby actually has a picture of her when she was here when Betty Roberts was sitting in this chamber right behind us when she was 3 years old, and so she's back, and as close as we can get her right now to the desk that she sat in a few years back.
Well, very good. And I know that Senator Bozanski is going to take good care of you. It's an honor and privilege to have you. You might want to talk to Senator Dingfelder. She's a graduate of UNC, University of North Carolina. I'm not going to tell you how I feel about UNC, but you need to know that. It's an extraordinary school. It's a great state. And we're pleased you could travel here and be with us on this very, very nice and remarkable day. Senator Betsy Johnson, please.
I have two courtesies today. It is my great privilege and honor to have two constituents here today, Erin Salisbury at my desk, her husband Bob. Erin is Justice Roberts' granddaughter. And as long as we're talking about firsts for women in Oregon, she is the master of the Yankton Grange, we believe the first. My second courtesy, Mr. President, are the young people in the back gallery. They are from Nestucca High School. They're here with Frank Bronner, a longtime fixture in this building. They are here to see their government in action. They were visited by former Governor Roberts this morning. They were visited by Norma Paulus and others from this chamber. They understand that they're here on a historic day, and I would respectfully ask that you extend courtesies to them.
Okay, to the friends and the relatives of the Honorable Justice Betty Roberts, thank you for being here on the floor. I'm really pleased you could be on the floor. It's a special place to be. Anytime, I believe, a high honor, but to be here today, it's going to be especially nice, and I hope you've had those feelings. So I'm glad. Thank you, Senator Betsy Johnson, for making sure they got seated here. Thank you, Senator Chuck Thompson, for your willingness to share your desk as well. So thank you. Very well done. And to the young people in the back, I think I was supposed to go and speak to you sometime before today, so I apologize I haven't gotten to you yet. I got to get to you sooner or later. Are they back there, Senator Johnson? Are they the ones in the back?
Yes, sir.
Yes. And if I don't get to you, Frank Bronner is going to make my life miserable. So I know that I have to fulfill that obligation sometime today. So thank you very much for being here, and I hope you enjoy our activities here this morning. Senator Jenny Burdick, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I am honored today to have at my desk Joe Rice, who in the great circle of life is Bobby's mom, Henry's grandma, and Betty Roberts' daughter. She is the third born of Betty's four children, and she, in the 1973 and 75 sessions, Joe was Betty's legislative assistant, except in those days, they called them floor secretaries. So Joe was Betty Roberts' floor secretary in addition to being her daughter. She currently is a real estate broker in Milwaukee. And for me, it's a special pleasure today. It's a reunion of sorts because Joe accompanied Betty Roberts to my book group as we discussed her book a couple of years ago.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for being on the floor. And thank you, Senator Burdick, for sharing your desk with her. And I'm not a member of book clubs. I don't read books, so that's not something I'm proud of. But so anybody who's a member of a book club or reads books, I'm in awe of. So thank you for that, at least giving me a sense of being close to it. So I appreciate it very much. Did I see the Secretary of State Kate Brown around the side aisle, or she's not there. I know I saw her. Is she here? She's not. Well, I don't. Is she here? She's not here. All right. I thought I saw the Secretary of State, Kate Brown, here, because these are the kind of days you know you're going to make a mistake up here at the podium. You're not going to acknowledge somebody you should have, or when you acknowledge them, you're not going to do a good job. So I'm trying to cover all my bases here, and I don't know what's happening as Senator Floyd Brzezinski approaches this podium. So our federal district judge, Ann Aiken, I understand is here. The Honorable Judge Aiken, I believe, is on the side somewhere, and I just want to be sure I acknowledge her, the federal bench, and to all the family and friends of Justice Betty Roberts, we're pleased you're here. It is a remarkable event. The Senate will, in SCR 205, pay its ultimate high tribute to the late Justice Betty Roberts, and we will do that in a moment. I'm very pleased you could be here for this. I do think it's a special moment, and it's a special moment for us fellow senators that are all here, as well as for the great state of Oregon. With that, I'm going to move out of the courtesies, and I'll go to remonstrances. Recognize Senator Jason Atkinson.
Mr. President, thank you very much. Today we are having a historic day in which we as Oregonians surround ourselves with the greatness of pioneer women. And to that effect, Mr. President, I want to give a remonstrance similar to what I gave on the opening part of session, but today I want to direct it to a few senators specifically, Senator Winters, Senator Johnson, Senator the new one, Steiner Haywards, Senator Dingfelter, Senator Burdick, Senator Rosenbaum, Senator Mona Anderson. If you would please listen to me, I would appreciate it. You don't have a floor guest. You don't have a floor guest. No, I didn't. Senator Cruz, do not interrupt me during a floor remonstrance. If you look up at Senator Courtney and you see the arc in that wall, behind that wall is a room in which this body just recently restored. It is named after the first woman elected from Douglas County, elected to the Oregon State Senate. And with all of you senators that I listed off and your distinguished floor guests, I would urge all of you to take those ladies, those pioneers, back to the Clark Cloakroom and have a moment of history that we as a body have celebrated. Please do not miss that opportunity today to take your guests to the new cloakroom. Thank you.
Recognize Senator Ted Farioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, over the last 20 years, family income has increased by 200%, while state government spending has increased by more than 500%. In other words, government spending has outpaced the growth of personal income by more than 2.5 times. In addition to a spending problem, there simply are not enough mechanisms to root out waste in government. What we are stuck with are government spending habits that suffocate job growth over the long term. In fact, a big part of our current unemployment problem is that government just keeps too much of the entrepreneur's money instead of leaving it in the entrepreneur's pocket to support the growth of Oregon business and the creation of Oregon jobs. Want to know a cheap strategy to spur job creation in Oregon? Cut antiquated government spending patterns and return the savings to taxpayers. Thank you, Mr. President.
Are there further remonstrances? Questions from the House?
Mr. President, I'm Derek Bradley, co-speakers informing me. The House has passed House Bill 4014, 4045, 4111, adopted Senate concurrent resolution 207.
Reports from committees. In accordance with SR 8.551, committee report summaries number 16 and 17 were distributed to the members on February 14th. And number 18, number 19, number 20, and number 21 and 22 were distributed February 15th. And number 23 and 24 were distributed today. This information will be recorded in the Journal and the Status Report, and it is so ordered. We're now on to propositions and motions. I recognize Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that consideration of Senate Concurrent Resolution 205 be taken from its place on today's third reading calendar and be made a special order of business immediately.
Senator Dianne Rosenbaum has moved that the consideration of SCR 205 be taken from its place on today's third reading calendar and be made a special order of business immediately. To your motion, please.
Thank you, colleagues. As you heard during courtesies, we have dozens of family members, some who have traveled across the country to hear us talk about the remarkable life of Betty Roberts. That includes Betty's oldest daughter, Dianne Odell, who is seated with me at her former desk on this chamber. So this motion would allow us to take this up immediately.
Discussion. Senator Rosenbaum, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. President.
The question is on taking SCR 205 from today's third reading calendar and making it a special order of business immediately. Those in favor will answer aye.
Aye.
And those no. The motion has carried. The clerk will please read the resolution.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 205 in memoriam Betty Roberts, 1923-2011.
Recognize Senator Dianne Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, family and friends and honored guests, it's a great honor to present Senate Concurrent Resolution 205, which celebrates the life of a truly remarkable Oregonian, Betty Roberts. A mother, a grandmother, a teacher, a lawyer, a legislator, a judge, an Oregon pioneer, this was Betty Roberts. And every woman who is an elected official or has run for office, who is a judge, or even every Oregon girl and every woman who today plays sports, goes to school, has a job, and has equal opportunity and equal rights in Oregon is walking down a path that was blazed by Betty Roberts. As one of the state's judicial and political trailblazers, she was a true visionary, a risk taker who endured much indignity with great dignity. Her light shone bright for 88 years in Oregon, and our state and the world is a much better place because she was with us. Betty Roberts lived a fearless life. If she wanted to do something, first she would study it, then she would master it, and then she practiced it. And it didn't matter if somebody told her she couldn't do it. That made her even more determined. This was true for her career as a lawyer, a legislator, and a judge. With regard to her career, it's almost an understatement to call Betty Roberts a trailblazer. Following 12 years of service to the state of Oregon, first in the House and then here in the Senate, including at this very desk, followed by campaigns for governor and for U.S. Senate, most dedicated public servants would have called it good. Betty, on the other hand, had only begun her career. In the judiciary from 1977, when she was the first woman appointed to serve on the Oregon Court of Appeals, to 1986, when she retired from the Oregon Supreme Court, Betty Roberts well understood the separation of powers and deeply respected the rule of law. She received her undergraduate degree as a mother of four at the age of 35. She continued on to receive a master's in political science and eventually her law degree. And when you read of her life, either her own book, By Grit and By Grace, or all of the accolades that have been heaped upon her in the last year, you can see that Betty's was a life that was filled with words like first and only. Her political career began with her first campaign for office, running for a seat on the local school board, and she then broke barriers, being elected to the Oregon House of Representatives in 1964. And then 4 years later, in 1968, she won election to the Oregon Senate and became the only woman in the Senate at that time. She also devoted herself to giving women in Oregon better options. Her groundbreaking work on issues, including women's right to choose, domestic violence, divorce law, and sexual assault, changed the landscape for women in this state. She worked relentlessly on behalf of education, equal rights, better land use laws, and helped to steer Oregon's innovative bottle bill through treacherous legislative shoals to adoption. Her legislative accomplishments inspired her to run for governor, and she announced her candidacy for that office in 1973. She came in second in the race for the Democratic nomination, but the name recognition that she garnered in that campaign convinced the party to choose her as a replacement candidate for Wayne Morse, whose unexpected death mid-campaign for the U.S. Senate left an enormous void in Oregon's politics. Her judicial career was truly remarkable, and she was appointed, as I said earlier, in 1977 to a newly created position on an expanded Oregon Court of Appeals. In those days, there were no women in the building down the street, and Betty was the first female appellate judge and the only female judge on the court, and she often had to struggle for acceptance and respect. It was not until newer judges were appointed in 1980 that the court became a more comfortable and more inclusive environment. In 1982, Governor Vic Atiyah appointed her to the Oregon Supreme Court, and she became the first woman to serve as a justice on that court. She remained on the Oregon Supreme Court until 1986, but her impact in those 4 years were lasting on a Supreme Court that was already known for its independence and creativity. She wrote what she considered her landmark opinion in a workers' compensation case, not normally an area of the law noted for innovation or groundbreaking, but this case, Hewitt v. Safe, in which a male claimant sought benefits after his female companion and their child died in an industrial accident, benefits had been denied on the grounds that they were only available for female survivors of injured workers. And Justice Roberts' opinion identified gender as a suspect classification under Oregon's Constitution and broke ground once again. Even after she took on senior status after retiring from the Supreme Court, Betty Roberts remained active in politics and continued to serve as a visiting professor in political science at Oregon State University. She helped found the Women's Investment Network Political Action Committee to mentor and recruit and support women to run for the legislature. And she also was a founding member of Oregon Women Lawyers. Her work in the judiciary is so remarkable in our state that I think the gallery and even the floor is filled with some of the many women who have followed in her footsteps. And since Betty first served on the court, there are now 69 women serving in Oregon as circuit court judges, 6 serving as state appellate judges, and 2 as federal court judges, including the Chief Judge Ann Aiken, who is sitting with us on the floor today. I think one of the things I wanted to say, and I'll say it now before I run out of time, is that people don't talk a lot about the energy and life force and how much fun Betty Roberts really was. And I can remember many, many years ago in the late 70s when my husband was a staff member, a clerk at the Court of Appeals, that Betty used to invite the staff, the clerks and staff attorneys to her house in Mount Tabor. And that was a great house up on a hill with a swimming pool in the backyard. And I remember sitting around at this party where everybody was talking shop talk, talking about work, talking about cases and decisions. And then all of a sudden, Betty stood up and said, "You guys, why are we all sitting around talking? You're in your 20s. There's a swimming pool with water in it out there. Why don't we go swim?" And in her inimitable style, she jumped into her bedroom, pulled on her bathing suit, was the first one to jump into the pool, and after that, everybody else followed her to have fun, splash around, and swim. And it seems a pretty good metaphor for the way Betty was the first in the pool in so many ways. The courage that it takes to be the first, to do something when you're told that you can't do it, and then not just to do it, but to do it in a way that stands up for justice and fairness, and to build on that body of work by mentoring so very many hundreds and thousands of young women to come and follow along in your footsteps. That is an absolutely breathtaking and remarkable legacy. I want to thank Diane and all of Betty's family members and all of her mentees and colleagues who joined us today. Truly, as she said in her own book, By Grit and By Grace, she had a desire, a reasonable desire, to live the life she wanted. Her reasonable desire has and will allow generations of women for years to come to live the life that they want. And for that, Betty Roberts, we say thank you. Thank you, colleagues.
Recognize Senator Lori Montes Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I'm very honored to rise in honoring Justice Betty Roberts. Senator Ron Wyden said of Justice Betty Roberts, Oregon has lost one of its true giants, but we have not lost the memory of what she gave to our state. Her stature in Oregon's legal, legislative, and political history is legendary. She leaves behind an enduring legacy as a champion for equality and a tireless advocate for doing what was right based on facts and the truth. Throughout her career, Betty Roberts' passion was equity. She fought for equal treatment of women, of minorities, and of all Oregonians. After completing her master's degree at Portland State, Betty sought a PhD with the intent of becoming a professor. However, she was denied entrance into the U of O PhD program. The chair of the political science department told her that she was too old to begin a PhD. She was 39. And in 1962, she enrolled in a law degree program at the Northwestern College of Law. And by 1966, Justice Roberts, a single parent, graduated from law school. The same year, one daughter graduated from Stanford University, a son from high school, another son from eighth grade, and with the youngest daughter in high school, and she was cheering them all. She's truly an incredible woman. As a state senator in the late 1960s, Betty led the floor fight in the Oregon Senate for the Equal Rights Amendment and fought to the end workplace discrimination and provide women with reproductive freedom. In 1968, she fought for unrestricted access to abortion, ultimately contributing to the passage of a more limited legalization of abortion, and was instrumental in getting the Senate to adopt a bill barring racial and sex-based discrimination. And finally, like me but not really like me, she was an avid and competitive golfer who loved the game. Colleagues, I started looking at all of the awards that she got, and I can't list them all, but I do want to mention that she did receive a horrendous number of awards for her professional and political and civil activities. She won, or she was awarded many professional awards, education awards, and civic awards, and awards recognizing her work in behalf of women. Colleagues, please join me in honoring Justice Betty Roberts by adopting SCR 205. Thank you.
Senator Jenny Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to talk a little bit about Senator Betty Roberts. She served in this chamber. She sat at Senator Rosenbaum's desk, and she sat at Senator Beyer's desk during her tenure in the Senate. One of my favorite stories about Betty Roberts was her activities on the bottle bill. The bottle bill had tried in 1969, and it had failed. And in 1971, it was reintroduced. It passed the House pretty handily. And in the Senate, it came over, and it was referred to Betty Roberts' Consumer Affairs Committee, which she chaired. It had on that committee a 3-2 majority, and they looked like they were going to hold pretty well. Well, toward the end of the debate, the container industry realized that they were losing the fight. So they sent in the big guns in their Gucci shoes from the East Coast
to defeat this stupid Oregon bottle bill. And sure enough, Betty Roberts, as a good legislator would, took an amendment that looked like a reasonable amendment and passed it through. And the next day, this amendment was a trick. And the next day, all the opponents of the bottle bill had all kinds of different bottles on their desk, because what the amendment had done was make it so vague that you could have had Clorox bottles even included. So she got outmaneuvered. So somebody stood up, referred it back to committee, and Betty Roberts, instead of giving up, she posted a hearing for right after the session, got everybody together. Of course, the opponents were feeling so smug, they all went out for a beer. And while they were going out for a beer, Betty Roberts convened her two other colleagues on the committee who favored the bill, and they passed the bill out without the other. And so about the time they were finished, the other two walked in, and it was a done deal. So that night, and again, this was on compressed schedules because it was toward the end of the session, and that's why they thought they'd won. So that night, Betty Roberts gets a phone call from an unidentified person. And they say that if she can just keep it in committee, that there will be lots and lots of money for Democratic campaigns come election season. So Betty Roberts stood up on this Senate floor the next day and remonstrated about the phone call that she had received. And she challenged her colleagues on both sides of the aisle, on both sides of the issue, to not allow this kind of mentality in Oregon. And that day, the bottle bill passed. This is a perfect story about Betty Roberts, because it shows that she wasn't just a trailblazer in terms of getting places. Once she got places, she did stuff. She had a steel spine, and she would not back down. And she was a role model for other women. The first time I ever told the story I just told you was in my master's project thesis for the University of Oregon. I came up here in 73 to do a story on how the lobby works. And so this was a very good story about how the lobby works or doesn't work. And so that is the first time I ever told that story. And I also covered the 1975 session as a reporter, which was Betty Roberts' last. And covering Betty Roberts as a reporter, I learned a couple things. One is, there isn't a glass ceiling because she broke it. And two, as a woman who is interested in public service, there are no excuses. You just go out and do it.
Recognize Senator Elizabeth Steiner Haywood.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's an extraordinary privilege to have the opportunity to talk about somebody I never had the privilege of meeting. Both before and after her passing, I certainly heard a lot about Betty Roberts. She had no idea, of course, who I was. I'm going to take the liberty not of talking about Justice Roberts or Senator Roberts, but of talking about the effect that she had on me without ever knowing it. In 1978, I'm going to demonstrate that I'm one of the youngest people on this floor, or at least appointed or elected on this floor, I was in ninth grade. And we had to do persuasive argument reports. And I was very interested in the environment. And I learned that Oregon had passed this bottle bill in 1971. And I thought we should have one in Massachusetts. So I gave my persuasive argument report on the bottle bill, and I talked about how Betty Roberts had been instrumental, critical to its passage, never dreaming that one day I would be sitting on this floor, one desk away from the desk she sat at. Now, all these years later, here I am, because of women like Justice Roberts. Because of women like her, I was the first girl on my little league team in 1973. And I don't know how much heckling I'm going to get when I finally carry my first bill. It'll be nothing compared to what I got in 1973 on that Little League team. But she's one of the people who helped make that possible for me and all the girls who followed behind me. She's one of the people who made it possible for women to stand up and take their place, working toward social equity, working toward justice, working toward all the things that she believed in that have helped make our state the best in the nation. In my faith, when we talk about someone who's passed, we say, may her memory be for a blessing. As we continue our work toward making Oregon a place where everyone has a fair shot, where everyone gets a great education, where we protect our natural resources, where we provide health care that's affordable and high quality for every Oregonian, we will be making Betty Roberts' memory a blessing to all of us. Thank you.
Senator Jackie Winters.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, my honor and my involvement with it's Senator Roberts and not the justice. Of course, I knew her in both roles. But I was sitting and I was listening to the comments about the Honorable Senator Roberts, and it took me back to the senator that I remember as a staffer in McCall's administration and was appointed to a committee that Senator Roberts was a member of. And you can imagine this young woman coming from Portland to be in the midst of Senator Roberts and Representative Gracie Peck and others on a task that to look at an issue that is not the most romantic, nor is it high profile, nor is it one that grabs big headlines, but it was the issue of what do we do about fair and equity and justice for women that have been sent to OWCC. An issue that we often dodge even today in this building. And I had the honor and privilege and work with Senator Roberts and for her to help also to nurture me through that process, to look at an issue in its totality of fairness, to look at an issue in a way that says that if you believe and you're right about it, then you continue to pursue and address those issues until you get fairness and results. I will always remember how we brought about the change and changed the system at OWCC, a system that was far antiquated, a system that treated women as third-class citizens, not even second-class. A system that says that women still wore Daisy Mays, had a Daisy May Day one day a month. A system that said that women coming into OWCC had to wait for an enormous amount of time before they were included into population, in general population, but remain in segregation until they received a medical exam. I will never forget those days of working with Senator Roberts and others on that committee. I learned a lot. I hope I continue to carry that message with me throughout my career, because it taught me how to look at the least of these. It taught me that if we continue to persevere, we can bring about change. It also taught me something else, because I was very grateful to have the Honorable Norma Paulus with me, because with the days of the Betty Roberts and the Norma Pauluses and those, they taught me about bipartisanship.
Are there other members of the Senate who wish to speak on SCR 205? Senator Rosenbaum, do you wish to close?
Just very briefly, thank you, Mr. President. When we originally introduced this resolution, it was just days after Betty Roberts had left us, and that was in June 23rd of 2011 at the waning days of our last legislative session. And We decided, at the urging of family and friends, to wait until this year in 2012 to bring Senate Concurrent Resolution 205 before us. And I think it's great that we were able to do that, because it's been a remarkable day and it's not over yet. I know that there will be at 1:30 this afternoon a celebration of Justice Roberts' life in the Supreme Court, and that will be a wonderful occasion too. In closing, I just want to say that I was reminded of a quote that's associated usually with Martin Luther King, and it is that justice is what love sounds like when it speaks in public. And I think that could very well have been said about Betty Roberts. Her life was something that embodied that every day. She leaves a legacy of justice for all Oregonians, especially for women and people who struggle against discrimination. And the overwhelming love of her family is clear, and we can feel it around us at this moment. And the countless lives that Betty Roberts touched, of people here today and people who couldn't be here today, and generations of Oregonians who will benefit from her work. Betty, we will not see the likes of you soon again in Oregon. We are grateful that you were here. We will remember you always, and you will always be in our hearts. Thank you, Mr. President.
The question now arises upon the third reading and the final passage of SCR 205. Those who are of the opinion the bill shall pass will answer aye as their names are called, and those opposed, no. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Johnson? Cruz, Modest Anderson, Monroe, Morse, Nelson, Olson, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Shields, Starr, Steiner Hayward, Telfer, Thompson, Berger, Whitsitt, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Beyer, Boquist, Burdick, Devlin, Dingfelder, Edwards, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas, President Courtney.
Yes.
30 aye votes.
SCR 205, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Let me say, I also have been remiss. The members of the Oregon's highest court, the Oregon Supreme Court, are in the South Balcony. I want to acknowledge that your presence here today. It's an honor and privilege that you would be here. I always like it when different branches of our government, the executive branch, legislative branch, judicial branch, come together. And of course, today we've done it to honor Justice Betty Roberts. So thank you for being here. To all the family and the friends, and to all those here and not here, the Oregon State Senate at this very time has paid its ultimate tribute to a fellow Oregonian. Justice Betty Roberts, in a unanimous vote, and on behalf of the Oregon State Senate, I want to thank you for being here as we acknowledge the incredible work and life of an extraordinary Oregonian, not only to our form of government, because she served in so many different parts of our government, but to the great state of Oregon and all her people. It's a good day. So thank you, one and all. We are now we will now turn to the regular order of businesses. We're under propositions and motions. And we're going to move into other areas. I now recognize Senator Bruce Starr, please.
Request to return to remonstrances, Mr. President.
Okay. Without objection, please feel free to return to remonstrances, Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I want to remonstrate today on an issue. As a member of the minority has certain tools. Remonstrance is one. Quite honestly, pulling bills to the floor is another. I don't intend, Mr. President, for this exercise to be necessarily partisan. But there's a bill that's been introduced. It's Senate Bill 1590. That particular bill is a bill that I believe would strengthen the legislative branch of government. We just talked about multiple branches of government. Senate Bill 1590 would sunset state agencies on a rolling basis, would require an affirmative vote of the legislature to reauthorize those agencies. That's not a partisan issue. It's not a process that ought to be super controversial. It is, without question, a process that this legislature hasn't contemplated in the past. Other states have. The federal government does. It would allow accountability in the process, Mr. President. And I would urge that in the future legislatures that we would consider this particular issue in a way that would be bipartisan and recognize the goal is to strengthen the legislative assembly. Thank you, Mr. President.
Without objection, we now will return to the regular order of our business, and that is, I believe, under propositions, just a minute. And that would be propositions and motions. And I will ask the clerk will read the committee report. Excuse me. Senator Starr, for what purpose do you rise?
Well, Mr. President, since no one could understand my remonstrance, I will now make a motion, Mr. President.
Okay, just one second. So I will now recognize Senator Bruce Starr under propositions and motions, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 1590 be withdrawn from the Senate Committee on General Government, Consumer, and Small Business Protection.
Senator Bruce Starr has moved that the Senate Bill 1590 be withdrawn from the Senate Committee on General Government, Consumer, and Small Business Protection. Explain your motion, please.
I partly explained it in a remonstrance that nobody could hear or paid much attention to. But quite honestly, this is a bill that would sunset every state agency on a rotating basis. And it would allow for a contemplative review of every state agency. That's not a bad idea. It's a big idea, and I understand that. And I'm hopeful that while we have an opportunity just to focus just temporarily on this bill today, we can look to the future of what this would potentially mean for the legislative branch of government, strengthening the legislative branch, Mr. President. I urge an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. President.
Discussion of the motion to withdraw, which is now before us. Do you wish to close on your motion, Senator Starr? You do not. Is that correct? He does not. We are now voting on a motion to withdraw Senate Bill 1590 from the Senate Committee on General Government, Consumer, and Small Business Protection. Those of the opinion that Senate Bill 1590 should be withdrawn from the Senate Committee on General Government, Consumer, and Small Business Protection will answer aye as their names is called, and those opposed, no. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Cruz? Monis Anderson? Monroe? Morse? Nelson? Nelson? Olson? Przanski? Rosenbaum? Shields? Starr? Steiner-Hayward? Telfer? Thompson? Berger? Whitsitt? Winters? Winters? Atkinson? Atkinson? Bates? Beyer? Boquist? Burdick? Devlin? Dingfelder? Edwards? Farioli? George? Gerard? Hass? Johnson? President Courtney?
No.
Not answering, Nelson?
Excused.
Nelson, voting no. Bates, Beyer, Burdick, Devlin, Dingfelder, Edwards, Hass, Johnson, Monis Anderson, Monroe, Przanski, Rosenbaum, Shields, Steiner Hayward, Berger, President Courtney. 13 aye votes.
The motion has failed. We'll now, still on, excuse me, Recognize Senator Chris Telfer, please.
Vote explanation, Mr. President.
Please file your vote explanation.
Let me tell you why I voted yes on this bill. One thing I have learned here is that the legislature is great at thinking up new ways to spend money, but terrible at identifying and ending programs and agencies that no longer serve a purpose. Once a program is in place, its future is simply assumed, and funding flows to it in perpetuity. This bill would have provided a regular and clear mechanism to evaluate government, top to bottom, and put an end to the things that no longer serve Oregonians. It would be a simple way to promote efficiency. That's why I was a yes on this motion.
Your vote explanation has now been placed on the record. We are now continuing, I believe, under propositions and motions. Is that correct? Right. I will now ask the clerk will read the committee report and the minority report on Senate Bill 1564.
President Cornyn, your Committee on General Government, Consumer and Small Business Protection, to whom was referred Senate Bill 1564, having had the same under consideration, respectfully reports it back recommending do pass. President Cornyn, a minority of your Committee on General Government, Consumer and Small Business Protection, to whom was referred Senate Bill 1564, having had the same under consideration, respectfully reports it back recommending do pass with amendments.
Senator Alan Bates, where is Senator Bates? Find me Senator Bates. Senator Bates, you're up. Committee report, Senate Bill 1564.
My apologies. I move the committee report on Senate Bill 1564 be adopted.
Senator Bates has moved that the committee report on Senate Bill 1564 be adopted, please. Would you please explain the committee report?
Mr. President, this is a straightforward bill concerning a huge issue in my county and across the state. I can remember a time when home foreclosure was a rare thing. Something had happened to a rundown home somewhere in your city, or something had happened to a family that had been devastated in some way. That is no longer the case in Jackson County, nor in Deschutes County, or in many counties in our state now. Home foreclosure is a regular occurrence. It has devastated the housing market in my area. Families are caught in a situation where their home values have dropped by 40 or 50%. They're upside down their mortgage. They can't sell their home. They're being foreclosed on. They've lost their jobs. And in the middle of all this, they run into a system that frankly does not work for them in trying to deal with their banks. And so we have before us Senate Bill 1564. It does one very simple thing. It protects Oregonians from having their homes sold off from under them by one arm of the lender when the other arm of that lender is trying to negotiate with them. This is a piece of common sense legislation. It prohibits a foreclosure sale when a homeowner is actively engaged in mutual negotiations or in compliance with a modification agreement. Despite promises to improve practices, we have seen continued violations, one story echoing another, as the middle class homeowners who are struggling to hang on to their homes have gotten caught in a black hole of lost files and misinformation. We hear time and time again from homeowners who are advised by their servicers to reduce or stop their monthly payments so as to qualify for assistance, which never materializes. These are middle-class Oregonians engaged in a good faith foreclosure avoidance negotiations who end up foreclosed on with little or no notice, sometimes in the middle of those negotiations. Our local banks and credit unions have set an example which we should emulate. They are not the institution this bill speaks to. In my community in Southern Oregon, our local banks and credit unions have gone out of their way to put on free mortgage foreclosure assistance seminars and workshops for the public. They've worked diligently with their homeowners to try to avoid foreclosures. These local banks and credit unions are the real engine behind our local finance community, and I applaud their good work. Senate Bill 1564 requires three things. It requires that if the borrower is in compliance with an agreement to prevent foreclosure, that the lender cannot foreclose on them. It requires a timely notice to the borrower when the bank has decided to terminate negotiations and proceed with that foreclosure sale. And it further requires the bank to file a copy of the notice in the county records. I fully realize this bill is not going to solve the foreclosure issue and the housing market collapse in our communities, but it's a small step in the right direction, one we should take today and move forward. I wish I could tell those homeowners out there who are upside down their mortgages that we can do something here in this state Senate to solve that problem, to get them more jobs, to help them with their homes. We can't do a lot, but we can do at least this much, and we should do it here today. Thank you.
I now recognize Senator Brian Boquist, please.
Mr. President, I move the minority report be substituted for committee report on SB 1564, please.
Senator Brian Boquist has moved that the minority report be substituted for the committee report on Senate Bill 1564. Explain your motion, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yesterday, Doc Bates and I were probably 2 leagues apart or 5 miles abreast, one of the two on the bills. Today, we're exactly 1 inch apart. It's really simple. Those who submitted the minority report believe the existing rules and the existing authority of the Attorney General can enforce this. And those who support the majority report or the committee report believe we need the UTP. That's the only difference between the two. Again, the main bill says the UTP needs to be used by the Attorney General to enforce it, and the minority report says the Attorney General already can use his existing authority. Simple difference. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. We are now under discussion of the minority report, please, so that we discuss our remarks should be confined to the minority report, which has been described by Senator Brian Boquist. Under discussion. Well, Senator Boquist, would you have any like to close on your motion, please? Senator Boquist, do you wish to close on your motion? He does not. Senator, yes, Senator Dianne Rosenbaum?
Mr. President, I am of the Senate.
Senator Dianne Rosenbaum has demanded a call to the Senate, and she is joined by Senator Alan Bates and Senator Lori Manas Anderson. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the Sergeant of Arms will attend. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Atkinson? Bates? Beyer? Boquist? Burdick? Devlin? Dingfelder? Edwards? Ferrioli? George? Girard? Haas? Johnson? Cruz? Manas Anderson? Monroe? Morse? Nelson, Olson, Przanski, Rosenbaum, Shields, Starr, Steiner Hayward, Telfer, Thompson, Berger, Whitsitt, Winters, President Courtney.
Here. All members that are subject to the call are now present. Again, we are voting on the substitution of the minority report in Senate Bill 1564. The question now arises upon the substitution of the minority report for the committee report. All those in favor answer aye as their names are called, and all those opposed no. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Manas Anderson? Monroe? Morse? Nelson, Olson, Przanski, Rosenbaum, Shields, Starr, Steiner Hayward, Telfer, Thompson, Berger, Whitsitt, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Beyer, Boquist, Burdick, Devlin, Dingfelder, Edwards, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, President Courtney.
No.
Cruz? Voting no. Bates, Beyer, Burdick, Devlin, Dingfelder, Edwards, Haas, Johnson, Bonas Anderson, Monroe, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Shields, Steiner Hayward, Berger. 14 aye votes.
The minority report has failed. In accordance with SR 8.602, the Senate will take immediate action on the third reading of Senate Bill 1564 as amended by the committee report. The clerk will read the bill, please.
Senate Bill 1564, relating to notice requirements to sale of property subject to trustee and declaring emergency.
Senator Bates, under discussion. You have no discussion. Okay. So we are now under discussion of Senate Bill 1564 as presented by Senator Bates in his opening remarks. Recognize Senator Lori Montes Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I rise to express my support of Senate Bill 1564 because the foreclosure crisis is having a tremendous impact on Oregonians, especially my constituents in the Gresham and East Multnomah County areas. This bill has the potential to help middle-class families in Oregon who are struggling to stay in their homes. Over the past few years, the number of constituents who have come to me with horror stories about botched mortgage modifications has grown tremendously. Although each case is unique in its own right, they all share a common thread. They are stories of a system that is simply not working, a system in which hardworking families can't get a fair shake or even a straight answer. The damage this is doing to my community and my district's economy is not an exception. It is now a rule in our state. I'm sure each one of you has received similar calls from frustrated and frightened constituents and seen the foreclosure signs dotting unkempt lawns in your own neighborhoods. With nearly 90,000 foreclosure filings projected in Oregon in just the past few years, no corner of our state is immune. Rural, city, suburb, it doesn't matter. The foreclosure crisis is having a dramatic impact on Oregonians, regardless of their party affiliation or zip code. The legislation before us today will go a long way toward finally plugging the heavy flow of foreclosures that have stripped our state of prosperity and security for far too long. We are behind the curve. Our legislative colleagues in nearby states, most recently Washington, have already responded to the crisis. Standing by and doing nothing is clearly a losing tactic, and in the most recent foreclosure data, our state was the only one in the West that saw a rise in foreclosures while our neighbors were down by double digits. Senate Bill 1564 would implement the use of the highly effective strategy known as common sense. By requiring a mortgage servicer to notify a homeowner of their mortgage modification status prior to foreclosure, we will be able to eliminate the dual-track process. I had the opportunity last session to meet one of my own constituents, Valerie Arthurs, who had gone through the extremely confusing and difficult dual-track process. As she was on the phone with one arm of her bank assuring her she was on the path to a permanent modification, a FedEx worker was knocking on her door with foreclosure notices sent by another arm of her own bank. In addition to ending the dual-track process, Senate Bill 1564 would require a servicer to inform a homeowner if their foreclosure date is postponed to a new date. The fact that this isn't already routine practice only serves to underscore the incredibly ineffective system our homeowners are forced to currently abide by. Public sentiment is strongly in favor of these changes. And why are we here if not to implement the will of everyday Oregonians? This important legislation will help middle-class families across Oregon who are struggling to keep a roof over their heads. Every loss of a home from foreclosure is a tragedy, but for a family to lose a home that could have been saved through mediation or other means is worse than a tragedy. It is an injustice.
It is an injustice that damages whole communities and creates a major drag in our state and local economies. We, in the 2012 short session, have to help Oregonians save their homes in this worst housing crisis since the Depression. Please join me in doing better for our constituents. I urge your aye vote on Senate Bill 1564. Thank you, Mr. President.
Recognized Senator Floyd Prezansky.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill. Mr. President, I'm going to be standing in support of the bill, and I wanted to address the one thing that was the separation between the two bill, or the minority report and the committee report, and that is the UTPA. I think it's important to put on the record that this is an essential part because it will, in fact, give some type of a remedy where there is, in fact, a violation. Clearly, the violation is one that it will not be one that will be muddied up or somehow lost in whether there's an abuse of this process, because under the bill, it will require the duty to impose on the lenders is very clear and very simple. They have to send a notice to the individual family. They also have to record that notice. That's it. If they fail to do that, then they're subject to the UTPA. If they do, in fact, send the notice and record it, they're not. It's a very bright line. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion of the measure, which is now before us. Senator Bates, do you wish to close?
Just very quickly, colleagues, I want to make you understand, if I can, how important this piece of legislation, the next one we're looking at, that deal with foreclosures. It's unbelievable, truly unbelievable, what's happening in Jackson County across this nation. It's not just a matter of a dual-track issue. About 2 months ago, 3 months ago, there was an article in the Medford Mail Tribune in which a company had listed the top 150 cities in the United States to go and buy a home under foreclosure, get the best deal to make an investment. Number one out of those 150 cities was Bend, Oregon. Number two was Carson City, Nevada. And number three was Medford, Oregon. And the line went on down. We are in a terrible situation here, whether we like to admit it in this building or not. People are being foreclosed on who have worked hard all their lives, who put big money into their homes, who have lost that equity, lost their wealth, and now probably lost their job and have to find a place to live. In Medford, we have investors coming in buying 7, 8, 9, 10 of these homes at a time and turning them into rentals. People who were just foreclosed on are now back in those rentals, never having a chance to own their own home. This is what is actually going on in our communities. I believe we're not here to take care of big international banks. We're here to take care of the people who elected us and brought us to this building. The little guy out there in the street, the little guy out in Main Street, the person in that middle-class home trying to make a living with job losses, medical problems, trying to stay on their own home. The elderly person who has been foreclosed on and moved out. There are 1,000 cases like that across this state. We need to pass this bill and the one that's coming next. We need to stand up for the little guy in Oregon for a change, not for the big international banks. Thank you.
For what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I respectfully ask for a call of the Senate.
Diana Rosenbaum has demanded a call of the Senate, and she is joined by Senator Jenny Burdick and Senator Lori Montes Anderson. The doorkeepers will please bar the doors. Senator Byers, your light is on. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the Sergeant of Arms, please, will attend. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Atkinson? Bates? Byer? Boquist? Burdick? Devlin? Dingfelder, Edwards, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morse, Nelson, Olson, Prezansky, Rosenbaum, Shields, Starr, Steiner Hayward, Telfer, Thompson, Berger, Whitsitt, Winters, here. President Courtney.
He's here. And all members up to the call are present. Before we go to a vote, I believe, Secretary of the Senate, this is the appropriate thing to recognize Senator Lee Beyer.
Yes, Mr. President. Just to a potential conflict of interest, I'm a member of a credit union board of directors.
Thank you. Now I recognize Senator Brian Boquist, too.
Thank you, Mr. President. Conflict of interest. I have immediate family members that could be affected by this.
Thank you. Are there any other potential? Okay. All members subject to the call are now present. The question now arises upon the third reading in the final passage of Senate Bill 1564. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will answer aye as the names are called, and those opposed, no. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Monroe?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Nelson?
No.
Olson?
No.
Brzezinski?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Shields?
Aye.
Starr?
Aye.
Steiner Hayward?
Aye.
Telfer?
Aye.
Thompson?
No.
Berger?
Aye.
Whitsitt?
No.
Winters?
No.
Atkinson?
Yes.
Bates?
Aye.
Beyer?
Boquist? Aye.
Burdick?
Aye.
Devlin?
Aye.
Dingfelder?
Aye.
Edwards?
Aye.
Ferrioli?
Aye.
George?
Aye.
Gerard?
Aye.
Hass?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Cruz?
Aye.
Monis Anderson?
Aye.
President Courtney?
Yes.
Voting no, Ferrioli, George, Johnson, Cruz, Nelson, Olson, Starr, Thompson, Whitsitt, Winters, 20 aye votes.
Senate Bill 1564, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Senator Boquist, for what purpose do you rise?
Explanation. Vote explanation, Mr. President.
Please file your vote explanation.
Yeah, Mr. President, I reluctantly support this. I'm still concerned about the UTP and will take my concerns to the House.
Thank you. Your vote explanation is now on the record. Recognize Senator Jeff Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Vote explanation.
Please file your vote explanation.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, the assumption in here is that banks are out there trying to foreclose, and I'm trying to get my head around the fact that they would want to foreclose where they don't have to and be left with a toxic asset that they'll have to unload at 40 cents on the dollar. It makes no sense. I think this is sending a bad signal.
Your vote explanation is now placed on the record. Are there any other vote explanations? Senator Winters?
Yes, Mr. President, vote explanation. My explanation is that the cause of foreclosures by and large is that we need jobs so that individuals can pay their mortgage.
Any further vote explanations? We'll proceed to go forward now. Action on the executive appointments that require Senate confirmation. Introduction to the first reading of Senate measures, please.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 210 in memoriam Jeanette Hamby, 1933-2012.
This is transmitted to the President's desk for referral. Now under the second reading of Senate measures.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 208 in memoriam Stephen Pothaker, 1952-2011. Senate Bill 1508 relating beverage containers and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 1513 relating to water right lease split water use between existing rights and in-stream rights. Senate Bill 1528 relating to liquor enforcement inspectors and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 1533 relating to green energy technology in public buildings. Senate Bill 1556 relating to contract preferences for federally funded transit projects and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 1558 relating to economic development revenue bonds and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 1559 relating to 911 emergency communications and describing the pickup date. Senate Bill 1563 relating to members of uniformed services and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 1588 relating to exclusion from definition of employment of certain services for certain owner-operated managed entities and prescribing an effective date.
These are passed to the calendar. We're now under the third reading of Senate measures. Would the clerk please read the bill?
Senate Bill 1509 relating to health and declaring emergency.
Recognize Senator Lori Montes Anderson.
Mr. President, I move that consideration of Senate Bill 1509 be taken from its place on today's calendar and be referred to the Rules Committee.
Senator Lori Montes Anderson has moved that the Senate Bill 1509 be taken from its place. Well, I don't have it. I want to make sure I say the right thing. It be taken from its place on today's third reading calendar and placed and sent to be referred to the Senate. The Senate has moved that the consideration of Senate Bill 1509 be taken from its place on today's calendar and be referred to the Rules Committee. To your motion, please.
Mr. President, there is some issues. The Board of Dentistry has already ruled on one piece that's in part of this bill that needs to be removed, and then they need further analysis of another section of the bill. And so we would like it to be sent to Rules to be fixed since we don't have time to send it back to our own committee.
Is there further discussion of the motion which is now before us? Senator Montes Anderson, do you wish to close? Question is, I'm referring Senate Bill 1509 to the Rules Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. This motion has carried. Would the clerk please read the bill?
Senate Bill 1552, relating to foreclosures of residential trustees and property money, declaring emergency.
Recognize Senator Brian Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, SB 1552A comes from your Senate Committee on General Government, Consumer, and Small Business Protection. No revenue impact. Fiscal statement is issued. This is a bill that I am actually co-carrying with Senator Beyer, and we co-sponsored this. I want to give you a little history of the bill, how we got here, and then explain what the bill does. I'm going to try and use brevity, and I've been assured that my closer is going to use brevity too, because this is probably the most lobbied bill so far this session. I counted 14 floor letters in support of it on my desk. I appreciate every one of those entities, and I think so does the good lady from Coos Bay, where we cut trees still, and we have a paper industry, so they can keep putting those floor letters out there all they want. Having said that, this bill comes 5-0 out of the committee. Let me explain why. This is the foreclosure bill. It's not a surprise to anybody. I think everybody on the floor knows that. When we brought this bill forward, Senator Beyer and I, several other Republicans, several other Democrats, we discussed how to bring this forth. One of the ironic things is Senator Beyer and I both virtually sent down the same bill draft downstairs. I got four pages back, and he got enough back, which was three or four times that we could actually work with. And so we're here on the floor with 1552. It's almost identical to the bill that I was on before. When we got out here into the discussions, we started looking around and saying, we really have five to eight bad apples in the foreclosure industry, in the servicers and the banks that we need to address this issue is. And so we have small businesses out there in, you know, community banks like Bend that are already doing the right thing. We have credit unions out in Forest Grove that are already doing the right thing. And we have savings and loans entities out in Albany doing the right thing. But the problem is, when you have a bad apple in the bunch and you put it into the bucket and the box, it rottens everything else. And so you start throwing the bad apples that come out. So in discussions in the committee and across the board, we did some trimming back on this bill so that it targets just the bad apples and the bad characters in the industry. So let me tell you what it really does. This is a meeting bill. You have on your desk a piece of, Mr. President, permission to use from visual aids?
Without objection, please feel free to do so.
Colleagues, you received an email, and I know like the rest of you, I'm sure one of your staff members read it, but I didn't even read it. I knew it was out there, so I had to go get a copy of it, and that's on your desk as a floor letter. Here in the past couple of weeks, the 49 state attorney generals, including ours here, reached an agreement with the five largest banks to provide $25 billion in multi-state relief on foreclosures. Of this, an estimated $30 million comes to the state of Oregon in actual cash to the state. And about $200 million, for a better word, in refinancing comes to the state. This is not the first program we've had like this. Two other programs have been out there. There was a countrywide program that brought $100 million with relief. And if you remember, Countrywide is not Eastern Oregon. It used to be an entity which is now owned by Bank of America in Charlotte, North Carolina, whose shares, I think, are selling around $4 today, which tells you why they're selling around $4, and they were about $100 a couple years ago. This $100 million agreement went no place in Oregon because there weren't any meetings to come to a conclusion and reach any agreements. Last session, there was a consent order agreed upon between the bad apples, we'll say. That consent order hasn't really gone anywhere because, once again, the two sides aren't getting together. I said primarily this bill is a meeting bill, and in a nutshell, what it does is we have an agreement out there that has been reached with these five banks, and there's about three others that are problem banks. Again, they're not based here in Oregon, but they work here in Oregon and have branches here. And there's that agreement, and what this bill does is says if the person being foreclosed upon wants to have a meeting with a mediator to try and resolve the issue, they must get that meeting. And so all we're doing is putting the two people in the same room at the same time and the rest of it all is pretty much window dressing. This doesn't resolve the issue of foreclosures, but it will resolve a lot of issues for people understanding what's going on, and then they will be able to identify solutions so they don't foreclose in the house in Forest Grove, they don't foreclose in the house out in Bend, and they don't foreclose in the houses down in Coos Bay. That's really what we're doing. And there are a lot of people that say, well, we don't need this bill. They're already doing it. Let me give you one example from our committee testimony, and then I will move on so we can be out of here in 6 minutes. In our committee, there was a very interesting thing that transpired. The people who came to testify did not come and give us the story that, oh, I got into this, I shouldn't have borrowed the money, the appraisal was too high, the bank, you know, loaned me money I couldn't pay back, the bank's doing this to me, so on and so forth. The committee testimony was very interesting because all the things that the consent order did, all the things Countrywide was supposed to do, a lot of these individuals did. They went to the Salem Center down here and they attended the meetings that were sponsored by the big banks. They sat at a table with a bank officer, I guess if you can call it, we'll just say a bank employee. They signed a piece of paperwork. They were told that they were going to get refinanced. They told they weren't going to be foreclosed on. And you know what happened? The people in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the people in Minneapolis, St. Paul, foreclosed on them. They're standing in our committee with paper in their hand saying, I got an agreement signed by these banks, and they're not supposed to do this. I don't need to tell you, if you're in foreclosure, there's a reason. Most of these people are unemployed now. Most of these people can't afford this. And so, yes, they could go out and hire a $400 an hour lawyer if they could afford to. And yes, they could go to court. But that doesn't help. They don't have $400. If they had $400 to start with, they would have made the mortgage payment. And in almost every case that we heard in our hearing, you know what? They didn't miss any payments. They did not miss any payments. This wasn't the people who stopped paying, didn't do anything. They were communicating with the bank. They did what the bank said, and they got screwed. I'm going to get wound up, so I better slow down here, right, Senator Barr? Anyway, the basis of the bill is we want both sides to sit down, rationally discuss this, have the banks or the person who is foreclosing talk to them, tell them what their options are, and see if they can come to an agreement. That agreement leaves them in the home. If they reach an agreement, they don't have to. That leaves them with a house that's occupied paying property tax. That leaves them still with money to buy groceries. And it helps the jobs in every one of our communities. It's really a very simple bill. All we're saying is come to the Senate, let's have a meeting, let's debate it, and that's it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Recognize Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I rise in support of Senate Bill 1552. And just to say that we have a crisis still today in Oregon. And unfortunately, it's a crisis that could have been prevented for middle-class Oregonians had this bill and Senate Bill 1564 been in effect 3 years ago when we were being told there was no foreclosure problem in Oregon. I remember when I was growing up and people used to use the term like safe as houses as something that could never go wrong, that if you bought a house, if you saved your money, you went to work every day, you could actually have a good life and for your kids too have something to leave behind. And that did unravel. It unraveled in a way that this country, I don't think, has ever seen before, except perhaps during the Great Depression. This bill is a simple step, a common sense step that we can take to try to salvage what's left of the American dream for thousands of Oregon homeowners. I think it's the least that we can do. It will help a great many people in all of our districts around the state, and by doing that, we'll also help stabilize our economy and help Oregon get back to economic health. So I am proud to vote for this bill today and would urge you to do so as well.
Recognize Senator Fred Girard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I too rise in support, but I'd like to put on the record a couple things, and that is, colleagues, we are suffering from a failed federal policy, not a failed state policy. What happened that really fouled things up was Greenspan allowing mortgages, especially subprime mortgages, to be sold on a secondary market. So what happens is your bank gives you a mortgage, but then goes sells it on a secondary market, and that gets bundled. And that bundle then can be sold and sold and sold. And sometimes when mortgages and stuff start getting a little iffy, they get sold for less and less. Sometimes it's sold for like 50 cents on the dollar. Personally, that happened to me. I had a health facility, and it got sold on a secondary market, got foreclosed on at 50 cents on the dollar, and even though I wanted to buy it back at full mortgage value, I could not. So that's a big problem. So then the federal government, in all their wisdom, overreacted. So we went from really easy money to Dodd-Frank, which is just the god-awfulest thing, and it makes money really hard to come by for the banks, and everybody has to meet all these requirements in order to get a loan. So we went to hard money. So in times when people need to be able to get a mortgage to help their house, they're upside down a little bit. Dodd-Frank, the federal policy, actually prevents that. So now, not to cry for the banks, but the average foreclosure in the state of Oregon, 18 months have gone by without any payment. 18 months. In the state of New York, it's 40 months. But this bill is an effort to try to put the people that can make the decision and the people that are trying to work the mortgage out in the same room and come up with an agreement. It's not a perfect bill, but the problem really lies with the federal government, and it's difficult for the state to do. But I will support it just because of the effort that was put forth.
Senator Chip Shields, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I just wanted to say thank you to the good senator from Sherwood for negotiating with the committee in good faith to get this bill in a way that it could really focus on the problem, the big banks, and in a way that it could come out of committee unanimously. So I just wanted to put that on the record. Senator from Sherwood, I appreciate your help.
Further discussion of the measure. Senator Beyer, do you wish to close, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, you know, this morning I was talking with a staffer for one of our members here. I'm not going to identify who that was, and was telling me the story of a 72-year-old woman that they had just been able to help. The woman had came to them frantically. She couldn't get any information. Her husband had died. She was trying to resolve the issue. Her husband had been good borrowers, they'd been paying things for years, and she was in dire straits and trying to work things out, and couldn't get an answer. Couldn't get an answer from the lender. The senator intervened, got one of the banking lobbyists to join in, and you know what? They worked something out. Why couldn't that happen up front? Colleagues, today, since 2008, over 54,000 Oregonians, 54,000 have been foreclosed on. One out of every 11 Oregonians today is either months behind in their payments or is currently in foreclosure. You probably have friends, neighbors, maybe family members who are in that situation. And certainly, emotionally, we all care for those who are close to us. But why else should you care? We know that foreclosures hurt those directly affected, but we also know that the crisis that we're in now with this is hurting everybody else, everybody who's a homeowner. It's dragging the prices down. And perhaps more importantly, if you look at the economic effect, if you look back 50 years, every business cycle, that Oregon has gone through, the construction industry, mainly the housing industry, has led us out of that, creating the jobs, getting us back on track. That's not happening this time. And it won't until we solve this problem. Now, the frustration for me is that the industry that got us into this problem got us into this problem through, frankly, bad financial practices and manipulation of the market, things that none of us would ever sanction, is the one that's keeping us from recovering. We need to do something. As the good carrier who opened said, this is a fairly simple process. All we're asking for is that a lender sit down with their borrower and see if they can work something out before they move forward with the foreclosure. And in many cases, the reality is what they will do is help the borrower understand that they are not going to be able to keep their house, and they'll work out a way to deal with that in a kind way that doesn't destroy their credit record and everything else. This isn't a new idea. 21 other states, when we did the research, have had similar programs to the one we're contemplating here. Two of them that we looked at most closely, our neighbor to the north in Nevada, have had the most aggressive programs. Since the Nevada program started in 2009, according to their statistics, and this is actually in 2011, 51% of the mediations have resulted in agreements, voluntary agreements, between the lender and the homeowner. Of those agreements, 60% allowed the homeowner to vacate the house with the alternative to foreclosure, including things like short sales, deeds in lieu, or cash for keys. This is a simple approach. It is not a mandatory, thou shalt do this. All it says to a lender is sit down or offer. Actually, it's voluntary on the part of the borrower too. You have to offer the borrower a chance to sit down with a mediator first and see if you can work it out. It doesn't bind them to any set solution. It just says you have to sit down, talk, and help the borrower understand their options and see if you can work something out. That's all it does. It's fairly simple. It'll clarify a lot of that confusion and frustration we've heard. It's a darn good bill. It makes sense. You need to think today, who needs the help? Is it the people that are in trouble, or is it the people who created the trouble? I urge your passage. And Mr. Chair, in closing, may I also note again for the record that I announce a potential conflict of interest as the member of the Board of Directors of one of the larger credit unions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Your potential conflict of interest is placed in the record. Recognize Senator Brian Boquist.
Yes, Mr. President. Same conflict of interest. This may impact my family members, and I probably have a despite for 5 of the 8 largest banks that make me biased.
Okay, my fellow senators, just watch this one. Where my head is, I get so focused on procedures. I need to announce, although the Secretary of the Senate is not totally convinced I do, out of an abundance of caution, watch this one. I need to announce a potential conflict of interest on the Senate Bill 1552, since my son works for one of the big banks. And then I also might beg you to unanimously consent to allow me, in absent, to file that same potential conflict of interest on a bill we just voted on, Senate Bill 1564. Is there any objection from me noting my potential conflict of interest on Senate Bill 1564? Thank you for indulging me. Please let the record show on Senate Bill 1564, my son works for one of the large banks. Thank you. Recognize Senator Chuck Thompson.
Mr. President, sir, I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest. I have money in a bank.
Jesus. Okay. Senator Jackie Winters, please.
Mr. President, I can't top that.
All right. The all-in, okay, including me, geez, I don't miss that. The question now arises upon the third reading and the final passage of Senate Bill 1552. Those opinion, the bill shall pass, so answer ayes, names called. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Morse. Nelson. Jesus. Nelson. Olson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Shields. Starr. Steiner Hayward.
Aye.
Telfer.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Whitsitt.
No.
Winters.
Aye.
Atkinson.
Yes.
Bates.
Aye.
Beyer.
Yes.
Boquist.
Aye.
Burdick.
Aye.
Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder.
Aye.
Edwards.
Aye.
Ferrioli.
Aye.
George.
Aye.
Gerard.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Cruz.
No.
Montes Anderson.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
President Courtney?
He's a yes.
Voting no, Ferrioli, Cruz, Nelson, Whitsitt, 26 aye votes.
The Senate Bill 1552, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. With without objection, I will set over the remainder third reading of the Senate measures until tomorrow's calendar. Seeing no objection. First reading of the House measures, please.
House Bill 4014, relating to education, declaring emergency. House Bill 4045, relating to public disclosure of concealed handgun license information, declaring emergency. Senate Bill 4111, relating to sale of real property and forced lien for local improvements, declaring emergency.
These will be transmitted to the President's desk for referral. Second reading of House measures, please.
House Concurrent Resolution 203, recognizing honoring Deputy Kelly James Friedberg for service to the state. House Bill 4008, relating to medical imaging, declaring emergency. House Bill 4009, relating to paired health professional program, declaring emergency. House Bill 4024, relating to central background registry. House Bill 4034, relating to progress payments to public improvement contracts, declaring emergency. House Bill 4039, relating to tax deferral programs, providing effective date. House Bill 4117, relating to funeral products, declaring emergency.
Okay. Thank you. These will be passed to the calendar. The third reading of House measures, without objection, I will carry over and set over the third reading of House measures to tomorrow's calendar. In accordance with the business of the Senate, in accordance with SR 8.403 committee referral list number 14, which was distributed to the members on February 15th, the referrals will be recorded in the journal and the stage report is so ordered. All right. I have concluded that sine die of the 2012 legislative session is imminent. Therefore, effective immediately, I'm invoking a one-hour notice in accordance with Senate Rule 8.16. The committee chair may call a meeting of the committee with less than 24 hours notice if at least 1 hour prior to the meeting notice is given to the Secretary of the Senate's office, posted outside the Senate chamber and in any other place reasonably designated to give notice to the public and interested persons. Announcements. Recognize Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Democrats, we will caucus in 10 minutes at 12:20. Please get your lunch and come to the caucus room.
Recognize Senator Ted Ferrioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Senate Republicans will caucus, so we urge members to get their lunches and come immediately to the caucus room. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other announcements for the Senate at this time? If there are no further announcements, and without objection, the Senate is adjourned until 11 a.m. It's 11 a.m. tomorrow, which is... One second. It's adjourned until 11 a.m. Friday, tomorrow, February 17th. The Senate is now adjourned.